You are tuned to Radio Free Asgard, episode number 73. We are still the only Thor podcast hosted by a true descendant of Odin, and we are a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network. And before we get started on our review, I want to shout out big time to the Legion of Substitute Podcasters for giving a kind of sort of plug on their last show, which is, as the time of recording, I think it's 206. Where they mentioned my name, brought up the show, and very, very much appreciate that. They've also added a link now to my show over on their site. And also to Manuel at thetruthfulcomics.com blog, who has also added me as a link over there. So thanks very much, guys. I really appreciate it. You know, I could use all the listeners I can get. All right, so without any further ado, let's move on to our review.
Cross the rainbow bridge of Asgard, where the booming heavens roar. You'll behold in breathless wonder the God of Thunder, Mighty Thor.
You like movies about gladiators?
Indeed we do, and we're wrapping up the adventures here of Thor in Olympus with Thor Blood Oath. Number four. Just wondering what you guys think about these shorter shows. Do you like the shorter shows? Should I keep doing them even after I get back from vacation? Or do you actually prefer the longer shows where I cover a couple of issues? I'm really curious to hear what people think. And you can get a hold of us by email, by emailing us at radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. Or indeed, you can contact us on Facebook and the Radio Free Asgard Facebook group. And yeah, it's a great little group there. So I hope you guys will join. And I always appreciate input, you know, because I don't get a lot. I guess that's sort of the eternal problem that you have when you do a podcast, is never really sure what the listeners want. And of course, I'm very open to suggestions. So anyway, let's move on with the review here. And of course, we are continuing our reviews of the Thor Blood Oath miniseries here with Thor Blood Oath number 4. Has a cover date of January of 2006, retailed for $2.99, which is $4.95 up in Canada. And we have a cover here that shows Thor apparently having been turned into a pig. It's a pig wearing Thor's helmet, and we see Mjolnir here laying on the ground next to him, and Hogan's mace, and behind Thor pig we see another pig wearing Volstagg's helmet. And I will say right now that this is the most deceptive cover, probably, that I've ever seen on a comic book, because nothing even remotely like this appears inside. In fact, I think there's one panel in which a pig appears, and it's the same pig that appeared in the last two issues. Anyway, once again, we have this border Celtic knotwork around the edge, you know, keeping in the theme, and the sort of crumbling skull down in the lower left-hand corner. And we pick up immediately where we left off last issue. And we have the credits. Actually, the credits are a couple pages in, but we'll just say it anyway. Story and art by Michael Avon Erming and Scott Collins. Will Quintana was the colorist. Dave Lanfear did the lettering. Schmidt Laser and Sitterson were the assistant editors. Tom Brevoort was the editor. Joe Quesada, the editor-in-chief. And Dan Buckley was the publisher. And we pick up where we left off at the end of last issue, where Hercules has Thor in a ferocious chokehold, and it looks as though he's getting ready to snap Thor's neck, and Thor's chin is inflating and deflating as we go through the book. Yeah, it's really weird, the sort of tumor chin thing here is really bad. I don't understand why this doesn't happen with other characters. Just Thor. And maybe what it is that most of the characters in the book, their facial features are defined by facial hair. You can certainly say that for the Warriors 3 and some of the other characters. Anyway, so we have Thor. He's being choked by Hercules, and he's thinking to himself that, here I be, son of a god, in the grip of another son of a god. In another time and place, Hercules would be my brother. But today we meet on opposing sides. Mine be reason, his be drunkenness. Upon the field of battle we would be equal. But in the art of hand-to-hand combat, he is slightly better. He is Hercules, after all. And there's a rumble of thunder. And we see, have a double-page spread here of Thor and all these thoughts that are going through his mind. And he's thinking about the stuff that Jane Foster and he talked about back in issue 1. And it's nice that we don't just get another recap of what has gone on in the first 3 issues. But he's thinking about how life appeared and single cell and talking about genetics. And he's thinking that they're all connected by one source. And sometimes it seems as though, it's like Adam and Eve, but even though that's not a very good comparison. Speaking for myself personally, I think I could go so far as to say it's a damn bad comparison and just chalk that up to being a weakness in the story. And a little bit disappointing to me personally, seeing as it's coming in a story which is pretty close to being flawless. It's actually a pretty good story overall. And this actually kind of echoes something that they repeated in the Thor movie, of course, years later. Science and magic say the same thing. We are one from the same source. Think about this. Life sprang out of some ammonia and chemicals. They say a bolt of lightning may have set life off, creating the first single cell structure. Lightning. And you hear the thunder and rumbling overhead, black cloud forming over where Thor and Hercules are fighting. And when they crack a thoom, a bolt of lightning comes flashing down between the two of them. Hercules falls backward, going, "Oh, father!" And Thor's kind of being thrown forward, going, "Ugh." And lightning strikes Hercules again with a thoom, and he's like, "Father!" And Apollo is saying, "Shall you not stop this lightning for your son, Father Zeus? Is not the light of the sky under your control?" So the implication here is this is Thor's lightning. He summoned it. "There is a time when even the most glorious of men must be put in his place. Hercules' time has long come. His ego and gluttony are as wide as a valley. This will be good for him." And the lightning has created this big crater, and Thor and Hercules are on opposite sides. And Hercules is like, "You cheated." And Thor is like, "The weather be to me as your arms are to you. My arms reach the sky itself." And Fandral is celebrating, says, "Ho, sons of gods, your match is met. I call it a tie." And Volstagg says, "Indeed, the honor of warriors is met. Never have I seen such a struggle." And we see that Dionysus has reached his pig, and he has a cup of water. The pig changes it into wine, and he drinks it. And he changes from an old, decrepit man into a ginger hottie. He's like, "Ah, I am restored, friend." And Hermes is pretty excited. He says, "That was splendid. Let's settle up our wagers." And Apollo says, "Interesting, to say the least. I must admit I enjoyed that." "What think ye, Lord Zeus?" says Poseidon. At this point, I'm just assuming that this is Poseidon, because this mystery god is still a mystery.
"I think my son is finally out of his stupor. His mother should have borne witness, always pampering the boy. She would have seen him get his. I owe the son of Odin thanks. I shall help guide him to his next destination. Ares would have loved this one."
And the gods just kind of go disappearing into their cloud. And Thor's looking pretty happy here, being doused by rain. And Hercules is going off towards the women again and says,
"My head rings like a bell. Bah! Have your pig back, Dionysus. The swine's wine sickens me. I shall not forget thy name nor face again, Thunder God. We are bound by muscle and toil of battle. Now we shall take time to reflect on these shadowy days of mine lost in drink. And you," he says to the ladies, "shall help me recover. Will you not, sweet things?"
"Indeed we shall," they all say together.
"Indeed we shall. Ha! What fine sounds you make."
And Dionysus is all buff now and hot looking. And he's like, "Take this thing to borrow the skin of my pig." And he hands him the cloth that was over the back of the pig. And Fandral's like, "Thank you, it shall be returned in time. It will also serve to contain the size of that apple you carry. Place it within this, and it will shrink for your pockets. It has many magical properties that may serve your journey.
I have enough wine here for years. So go, and may the gods be with you.
Thank you, friend, says Thor. May the gods be with you, both yours and mine.
And Thor and the Warriors Three go wandering off over the hill, and we see the Dionysus and the ladies are waving after them. And we shift scenes, and we see a lightning fooshing in this gray, cloudy sky. We have a beautiful two-page spread here. And see some rocks, kind of, you know, standing stones. They look like, not really standing stones, but I don't know what you'd call them. Regoliths, I don't know what they call them. They're rocks that are just standing there. There's like a portal opening up in the sky, and we see Thor has created this portal by whirling his hammer around, and the Warriors Three and Thor are falling through this hole and landing on this other plane. And Thor is saying, to go this long and not use the hammer Mjolnir feels odd. And Volstagg chimes in,
aye, to use it only as a transport seems a sin, but this is the blood oath we are bound by,
hence the title of the book.
And our oath goes well. We are led by Mjolnir to this land, the land of ire, where the spear of Cullen awaits. The land of green, the land of automobiles!
And they just about get run over by a Ferrari going very, very quickly. And Thor and his enormous chin are saying here,
it seems I am not led to the ancient island, but to the island of now, as it is today, on Midgard, Ireland.
And there's a couple of tourists there who look like Americans, and one of them is wearing a leprechaun hat and a shamrock scarf, and they're carrying an umbrella, obviously, because it's raining. And he's like,
look, Melanie, Renaissance actors.
Oh, Chad, the tour guide didn't say nothing about this. How cool.
Awesome.
And he takes pictures of Thor and the Warriors Three. And Hogan's like, rawr!
Oh my god, that was so cool. Maybe they'll fight.
And Thor's like, ignore the Americans. Come this way. And Volstagg's a bit confused. I thought we were in Ireland. Tourists.
Yeah, that'll be me in a couple weeks here.
Worry not, Volstagg. You will soon meet true Celtic blood.
And they go up to the megaliths here. And I guess they are standing stones in a way. And Thor taps his hammer against one with a tack. And there's these sort of grooves carved into it. And they are glowing green. And a doorway opens up in the side of this rock. And there's kind of, you know, like dry ice fog coming out of this rock here. And Thor is explaining here,
Ratatosk told me stories of the Celts. The blood of old no longer walks the earth, but resides deep within standing stones scattered across the land. Here is where the Lance of Cullen resides, this land's greatest warrior. I do not know what awaits within, as the gods of Asgard have not heard from the Tuatha De Danann in 1,000 years.
And as you might have guessed, the term Tuatha De Danann indicates the Irish fairy folk. They're going into this rock, and the tourists are still watching and taking pictures like,
oh, just like David Blaine.
And Thor, Fandral, and Hogan are, you know, going down into this hole. But Volstagg is too fat to fit, so he kind of yells down after them,
I will have to await here and guard my brothers. My girth is too much even for these magic doors.
And the tourists are like, bravo! And so we then cut to inside the rock where Thor and Fandral and Hogan have come into the land of fairy. I guess there's really no other word for it. I mean, it really looks like the land of fairy. Beautiful, gorgeous, absolutely stunning double page spread here. Very much like a Charles Vess drawing. And I think that this is one of those things. Charles Vess in the Sandman series really, I think, defined for all of comics the way fairy should look. And this is like a page right out of it. Extremely well done by Scott Collins in the style of Charles Vess. And there's this beautiful green emerald valley, and there's a castle there, and there's a big bonfire, and there's a waterfall with a water wheel next to it. The hill that they're all standing on looks like a sleeping giant, like part of the ground is actually the sleeping giant dude. Looks like some thatched huts. And Thor is pointing down towards the bonfire.
There, the spear of Cullen, slaughter, sits in a cauldron of boiling blood, the only thing that can contain its need to kill. 'Tis a bit much, don't you think? I've heard stranger tales.
Indeed, such as gods making the world out of a giant's flesh. That's quite a story, isn't it?
And as they're standing there, they're suddenly being attacked by thousands and thousands of little teeny tiny arrows. And they don't hurt them. Instead, they have kind of created their outline along this tree that they're standing next to. So whoever it is just trying to spook them, not actually hurt them. And Fendro's like, hello? And they don't see anything. And then all of a sudden, a little green man appears. And he looks very much like your stereotypical leprechaun. He says, hello there, strangers. We've not had visitors here in these parts since about a millennia and a half ago, I would say. Be a friend or foe? Oh, we be friendly indeed, says Fendril. My name is Frode, and I'll be the judge of that. Come down here, laddie, so I may look at you.
And they go down there, and he's like, huh? And he takes the tiny arrow Fendril has in his hand and takes it out of his hand.
Don't touch that. I can see from your eyes that you're good folk. You, Fendril, should stay away from arrows. I see they will be your death. Come with me.
And he's leading them along, and Thor is explaining why they're here. He says,
we come here seeking help, Frode. We come from the land of Asgard.
You don't have Loki with you, do you?
And he's like, no.
He's like, too bad. He always had the best jokes.
And leads them to the cauldron and the fire. And so now we're sitting all by the fire, and Thor is relating the story to the fairy folk of what had happened to them. So here's our recap. Basically, he's telling Frode what's going on. He says,
see? Clearly, my brothers meant no harm to the giant. The hunting accident was simply that, an accident. And now we travel on a Weirgold to repay his family in items of glory, which we intend on returning.
Do they know you plan on returning these items?
Jotunheim may make us take on this task, but they shall not turn us into thieves. We shall return the items in time.
And you see little fairies and leprechauns and stuff kind of dancing around here. It's fairyland, after all.
So what, may I ask, do you come by this way for?
You ask as if you don't already know. You knew our names, after all. I sense you have a keen eye.
That I do. Bring it out, boys. I sense you have come to borrow the ancient weapon of Cullen. Slaughter is its name, as it be so fierce in battle. Boiling blood is all that can calm its need for killing, lest it leap itself into the gut of the living by itself. And indeed, I do see it fit for slaughter to roam the earth again. But for one small deed, I ask.
And Hogan's like, here comes the twist. And the fairy folk bring out a baby who's crying. And he's like,
tell a story to this human babe we stole. All it does is cry, and it's driving us mad. Soothe it with gentle stories, and you may borrow our weapon in turn.
And Thor is horrified by this. Odin's beard, you stole a human babe?
And why not? Humans drove us underground to die out. We need to replenish our blood, but not at the cost of such noise.
Fandral's like, this complicates things.
And Hogan's like, no, it does not.
And Thor says, it makes things more clear. And he grabs the infant. And Hogan leaps forward and he grabs the spear out of the cauldron.
And the leprechaun's like, hey! And there's this scream. This guy, ah!
And the spear is glowing, this bright, bright emerald green, like something out of Green Lantern.
And there's like a shockwave coming out, and everyone's falling back. And Hogan's like, by the gods.
And the leprechaun guy is like, no, what have you done? You have disturbed slaughter. It calls for blood. Fools, it was us who were to trick you gods of Asgard. You have no honor.
Say what you will, says Thor, but we steal not innocent babies.
They go running off, and they're carrying the baby and the spear with them, and the leprechaun looks up, and he's got this huge evil grin on his face, and he's thinking to himself,
ha, my trick is still on, Thunderhead. Soon we shall have not only slaughter, but the hammer of the gods as well.
And he's chuckling here to himself. And we then shift scenes back to the surface, where Volstagg is entertaining the tourist by posing for photographs. And there's several tourists now around in kind of a little bit of a group here. And the tourists are clicking away, and Volstagg is standing in various poses. And he's like,
how's this one? And did I tell you about the time I wrestled the Midgard serpent?
And the tourists are all enthusiastic. Chad, this is wonderful! And just at that moment, Thor, Fandral, and Hogan come bursting out of the rock with the spear in hand, and they run right into Volstagg's butt. This apparently alarms all the tourists, and they all go running off.
Run, Melanie, run! Oh my God, he's totally got a bomb. I knew we shouldn't have left Kansas.
Shut up and run!
Volstagg is just very confused by what just happened. He's like, huh? And Hogan is trying to hold on to the spear. And the spear is glowing, and it looks like it's struggling. It looks like Hogan is really struggling mightily to hold on to this. And it's glowing, and Hogan's saying, what will we do with this? I can hold on to it no longer. And all of a sudden, the baby that Thor carried out leaps out of his arms. And he's growing these like, woad-painted tattoos on his body. And he's like,
let me go, you unworthy god. I'm no mortal babe, but Coolin himself, and that, you dolt, is my spear.
And he's aging rapidly as he leaps for the spear, and we see that Hogan's hands are glowing like they've been burnt, and Coolin is, like I said, he's getting older every second, and he's now like the size of a child, and he grabs onto the spear and says, come to me, Slaughter! And he's holding it up above his head as the three gods, you know, Thor and Volstagg and Fandral are looking on in amazement. And then Coolin, who's now grown to at least like teenager size, and he's leaping forward, swiping his spear, saying, come and do your deeds. Lay waste to these old gods that I may take their souls into the everlasting twilight. And he swoops his sword around in this big arc, and he cuts off Volstagg's head, and it goes flying. And Thor is looking aghast here in the background, and is to be continued. So, wow, what a great cliffhanger we have here at the end of issue number 4 with Volstagg's head cut off. What will happen? Of course, we'll find that out next issue. And I'm really enjoying the story. Like I said, you know, this is truly epic in scope and very mythic in all of its parts, though in a different way in each part, which is kind of really interesting. Really, really enjoying the story in general, even though, really, this is not a story that has a lot of action in it. Now, one of the reasons why these reviews of these issues don't take very long is that they're only 19-page issues. So this is actually quite a bit shorter than an old Lee Kirby issue, which are like 32 pages. Or a 28-page Walt Simonson issue. So it seems like they're short. Yeah, well, they are short. And a lot of them are double-page spreads or, you know, full-page splashes. So they do come rather more quickly than you would think. Anyway, loving the artwork once again. I could do without the ever-growing and ever-shrinking Thor chin. It looks like in some places, like when you go to the bottom of page 12, where Thor's chin looks normal. I mean, it looks like a regularly proportioned face. And then the very next page on 13, it's got this almost Popeye chin. It's, you know, I just don't get it. And I say, it has to do, I think, with the fact that we have a lot of characters in the story whose facial features are being more informed by their facial hair. So, you know, you have a particular mustache that you have on Hogan. You have, you know, the little goatee and Errol Flynn mustache on Fandral. And so their facial features don't change as much. But Thor, because he doesn't have any facial hair, he has this sort of inflating and deflating chin. I suppose I could call that an extra power, but it just I don't think that that was actually very intentional. Loving the portrayal of Fairy. And once again, like I said earlier, it owes a lot to the portrayal of Fairy that, of course, was popularized by Charles Vess and his work with Neil Gaiman over on Sandman. And, of course, that continued into other books as well, including things like Books of Magic. Now, we don't have any of the supporting characters of Fairy in the same way that we would in Sandman, but we do have a very similar sort of environment. I have no problem believing that Marvel and DC Universe's Fairy are the same place because they're being portrayed in a very similar fashion. And you know what? I'm okay with that. That would be kind of interesting if Fairy would be the in-between between the Marvel and the DC Universe. You could almost set a comic there. I mean, I wouldn't be too amiss to see Morpheus kind of lurking in the background. Anyway, so that's about it for this week. So thanks once again very much for listening, folks. And again, you can email the show. That is radiofreeasgard@gmail.com. And I'm going to go ahead and sign off for now. Thanks very much for listening. This is Tom Harris in Chicago, Illinois. We'll see you next week here on Radio Free Asgard.
Poor Volstagg.